Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the World of Ink Network, founded in 2011 by Virginia Grenier and Marcia Cook. Their vision was to start a radio show that helped writers reach their dreams. The World of Ink has a wonderful group of hosts who are dedicated to delivering shows to entertain and inspire listeners. The World of Ink Network shares resources that introduce tips, products, and services to help strengthen, support, and challenge those who love writing and the written word. Their hope is to bring not only authors, illustrators, and publishers together, but screenwriters, directors, and producers. New to the network will be a variety of special shows, bringing not only entertaining shows, but informative discussions on timely subjects. To learn more about us, go to www.worldofinknetwork.com or visit us on our Facebook and Twitter pages. Thank you for your support and enjoy the show.
Good afternoon from lovely Virginia. As you have heard, this is the World of Ink Network, and I'm Cassandra Dane, and my show is called The Edge. And that's where I actually take authors and publishers and other artisans to the very edge of their works, whether it's thrillers, horror, erotic, it doesn't matter. I just like to bring you their stories, their funny tales, and everything in between. Today I have an incredible guest with me. I know her in two ways. Not only is she and has been a designer of mine for several covers with my book Trope Books, but she also writes as Adrienne James, and she's got some awesome stuff coming up. So I want to say a great big hello to Miss Brenda Gonet. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I can't complain. It's a gorgeous afternoon here. It's beautiful. It's sunny. It's blue skies, no humidity, and that's rare for August in Virginia. How about you?
It's actually really nice out here today. You know, granted, the giant pregnant belly makes everything hot and humid and gross, but hey, it is what it is. It could be worse.
Yeah, and I don't know how you do it, girly. More power to you. You've got other kids, too, I know.
I do. I have two others. Yeah. Ooh. My life is a constant, you know, running. I never stop. Between the book covers, the writing my own stuff, I'm a photographer, I'm a mom, I'm a wife, and I'm, of course, you know, that wife that can't stand to make anything out of a box. I do everything from scratch, so I'm almost always in the kitchen. And, oh, yeah, I never stop.
Well, it is the life, and think of it this way, it probably gives you a little bit of fodder for your writing as well.
It does. It really does. If you've read any of my books, all of my characters pretty much have something. One of my interests is one of their interests, just because I know enough about it that I can make them sound like they know what they're talking about.
Oh, sure. I think we all put a little bit of ourselves into there, but... for our listeners, I was teasing with Brenda before we came on the show that, you know, the support that we either have or don't have as authors really can help or hurt us, depending. And writing erotic can be very interesting because a lot of people either think we do all those crazy things or, So I know you've got a supportive husband.
I do. My husband is very supportive. He's read everything I've written from the very, very... clean teen book that I released Overexposed all the way up through my erotic romance that he tends to like to point scenes out and be like, hey, wait a minute, was that us or was that somebody else? And I have to remind him that I do have an imagination and that I would never put a scene in there from anybody else because that would just cause all kinds of problems. But, you know, but a supportive family is very, very important. It helps keep you going when you don't see results like you want to. And they're like, but it doesn't matter because I know how great you are. And you're like, oh, thank you.
That does help. I mean, writing is solitary and sometimes very disappointing career. So if you have support around you, that makes a heck of a lot of difference.
It absolutely does. Absolutely.
And you created Adrienne James, that name, and I just found this out a couple minutes ago, too. Why don't you tell that story, where that name came from?
Oh my goodness. So when I first started, I've always written. I have written since the time I was in, I think it was second or third grade. My school counselor actually got me to start writing as a form of like therapy. My mom had been in an accident and she lost the fingers on her hand. And at that age, I pretty much shut down. And so in order to help me, they were trying to get me to talk and I wouldn't talk, and they tried getting me to draw and I wouldn't draw. So he came up with this idea of having me write out a story about a little girl and to see if that could tell them what was going on in my head. Well, it did. And, you know, I blamed myself because, you know, I was 7 or 8 or whatever it was. And, you know, most 7 or 8 year olds find a way to make everything about them. And but so that's when I started writing and I never really stopped. But it wasn't until I was married with, you know, I already had my daughter, my son was born, that I ever even considered putting anything out for anybody else to read. My husband is the one that was like, you know, you write really well. Why don't we do this? You know, do it, find out what you need to do, do the research, figure out how you want to publish this. I thought he was kind of crazy at first, but the more I looked into it, the more that it sounded great. The only problem was, Brenda Gonnett is a photographer, and all of my clients at the time I was living in San Diego, if they were to look me up online, they'd find my photography website. And I didn't want to confuse people looking for the photographer and find an author or vice versa. So I needed to come up with a pen name. I've always been very proud of who I am, very sure of who I am. I've never tried to be anything I'm not. That's one thing that my parents instilled in me, is to just believe in yourself. And any pen name I came up with, and I figured out like a million different names. None of them felt right. None of them was good enough. And eventually I was just like, but I am my mom and I am my dad combined, period. That's it. I'm me. And it actually came to the point where I was like, well, my mom's middle name is Adrian. My dad's middle name is James. It kind of goes together. Half mom, half dad, 100% me. So it worked and it felt right and it fit. And so that's how I got that.
That's actually a really awesome story for all the different ways we create pen names and, you know, wild things we look at or billboards as we pass or something. That's really a positive message. I love hearing that.
Yeah, and I mean, I know a lot of people who come up with pen names and they're not always 100% happy with them after the fact, but I have never once questioned that decision. It's never felt anything other than me. So I'm happy with it.
That's awesome. Well, why don't you tell me about The Billionaire and the Barfly?
Oh, goodness. The Billionaire and the Barfly. That was my first attempt at writing contemporary romance. But it was that took lots and lots of drafts to get it right. But I was tired of reading the hero that was 100%, you know, perfect man. Everybody loved him. He had nothing wrong with him, nothing. I wanted the everyday guy, but I also had to make him lovable enough and wanted enough to be a book hero. So I came up with my geeky, superhero-loving billionaire. I don't know about you, but I have a thing for hot geeks. But... So, hey, the geekier they are, the less action they got as a younger kid. So that means they had to do their research, man. They had to learn how to please a woman. They didn't have an option. They didn't get the practice. They had to learn other ways, you know, videos or magazines or whatever. I don't know what goes on in the boy brain, but that's where my brain goes. But I also was tired of reading about the girl, the virgin who, you know, is tempted and loses her virginity to this most perfect man. Or, I mean, it was as great as some of those stories are, there's so many out there, and I wanted something different. And because I couldn't find it, I wrote my own. And so Aubrey is this girl who's career-minded, and she's a total failure in her own eyes in a lot of aspects. But the one thing she knows she's good at is work. And she also knows that every other time she let a man into her life, that it took away from work, and she couldn't focus on more than one thing. So she goes to the bars when she needs an itch scratched, and she gets it scratched. And then she goes back to work and does what she needs to do. And Henry, who is my billionaire, he had the Playboy lifestyle for a minute, because here he was, a geeky guy who all of a sudden was a billionaire, and he had all these women throwing themselves at him, but he didn't want it. He didn't like it. And so when he sees Aubrey in the bar, and that just kind of hits everything off, and she's trying to convince him to sleep with her just so she can get him out of her head, and he's trying to convince her that she needs more than just sex, that she needs a relationship, because so he won't sleep with her. And it's like complete role reversal of most books you read about a billionaire. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely fun. Now, is this one published yet, or is it going to be published?
It is going to be published with BookTrope. You can still get it right now. It's going to be republished through BookTrope. You can still get it right now from me, but it's going to be going through another round of edits and all that fun stuff to be published through BookTrope.
That's fantastic. Which brings us a little bit to BookTrope. How has your experience been? Because now you're doing a couple of different things with them. And what do you think?
BookTrope, so far as an author, I really can't attest to much because I've just recently been with them for that. So I'm still waiting to see how that actually works out for me. But as a designer, I've met a ton of new authors. I get to work on a lot of new covers. I think I currently have 47 projects I'm the cover designer on.
Oh boy.
Yeah. There's a lot of them. I wonder who has a good chunk of those, Cassandra.
Well,
I've been a cover designer for a couple years now, and I mean it helps that I have the photography background. I never use my own photos because I don't do photos of models and things like that. I'm a family photographer, wedding photographer, and you know that would just not be right to put those kind of photos on somebody's book cover. That would just be wrong, and I don't do that. But I did have to learn how to use editing equipment and graphic design based on that. And so it's been a few years that I've been doing this, but most of my clients before I signed with BookTrope were all romance. And since signing with BookTrope, I've done a couple horror covers. I've done some mysteries. I've done a few that are really fun and let me get really creative and more than the boy and girl on the cover, which is great for romance, you know, but I like expanding and, you know, generating creativity, and it's a lot of fun. A last horror cover I did, I turned my computer around and showed my husband. I'm like, look what I just did. And he looked at it, he goes, that's kind of scary. And he like walked away from me. I'm like, well, that's what I wanted.
Well, see, and that's neat. And for the listeners who have not heard my show before, actually, as the real girl, Bethany Halley, I'm the managing director of two imprints at BookTrope, Edge and Entice. And that's how I met Brenda, because in looking and trying to garner cover designers, which can be a daunting enough task as it is, to fit the couple of imprints, Brenda was actually, I think you were the first that I worked with, and being that Cassandra does have a lot of books coming out or re-coming out, whichever way, I task you to do a lot of them. I think one of my favorites, though, is indeed Demon Kills, which happens to be a clear horror book that I wrote with Christian Jensen, and it was just perfect. You just took what was out of my head and put it on a cover.
That was a challenge. That was one of my first horror covers I've done. I've done two others since then, but that one just fell perfectly. That's why I always ask for a description of the book. I like when the book cover not only tells you what genre you're looking at, but also a little bit about the story. Because a cover, as everybody says, don't judge a book by a cover, but who are we kidding?
Right.
That's what you see. That's what makes you stop to read the title or the summary. But if it doesn't sell the genre, they're not going to care if it sells the book. Because somebody looking for horror isn't good. If you had just some plain, you know, black cover, it wouldn't have sold. Or it's a freebie, right? Whatever. But it wouldn't have made people stop and look at it, because they'd be like, well, that's not what I'm looking for. And they'd gone on to the next one that, like, put a chill through their spine.
Yeah, exactly.
Same thing with, yeah, it's the same thing with romance covers. That's why you see so many covers with the almost kiss, or nowadays with the much more than a no kiss. It's because it sells the genre. Does it tell you anything about the book? No, but, you know, I tend to ignore that part, and I actually do covers that tell you about the book and the genre, because I think that's where we need to be, and I'm hoping that trend actually catches on. But
and if you think about how covers, I mean, have changed over the years from what they mm-hmm. used to call the romance novels. If it was a bodice ripper, you knew that it was, you know, a little bit hotter than your basic Harlequin, fully clothed, chaste kiss kind of situation.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Thank God we've come a long way, is all I can say. We're boring.
Oh, man. Well, see, that's why, like, with Billionaire and the Barfly, the current cover is actually the second one that I did. The first one, I felt, fit the story a lot better, but it didn't make it fit the genre as well. It used to have a couple in the background, like it still does, but they were farther in the background. They were fully closed, and he had the girl leaning over a table kissing her.
Right.
But it didn't get it wasn't received as well as I'd hoped, so I did a little change up, and I brought the couple closer, and I kind of have her half dressed and him going after her, and it's much more well received, because everybody looking for an erotic romance knows that that's what that is. So
one of the things that I started with you is, and those designers that work with me at all know a couple of very clear-cut things. I like bold and in your face, and I loathe pastels.
Yes.
Just a thing with me. I get tired of the same. We've still fallen, it seems, into a lot of the same romance type covers where it's the mountain in the background, the girl and the guy, or the guy on the horse, or, you know, it's like, really, you know, how mm-hmm. many have to look just like that?
Right. I like pushing boundaries. I like finding ways to make your cover stand out amongst the others. And if it looks like everything else, it's not going to stand out. But if it looks too different from everything else, it'll stand out in the wrong way. It's a fine balance, and if you find a good designer, then you can find that balance, and you'll be golden.
It's true, and I think one of the conversations that you and I had was about the effect and the effectiveness of symbols on a cover. Very simple, very...
Yes.
You know, subtle in its regard, but also very clear in what it was about. And you, I think, personified this in covers that you have recently done for me for the Honor and Obey series. What inspired you for that?
I took a look through the top 100 in the BDSM category on Amazon. I do that a lot because I don't want to ever be caught out of the loop when it comes to trends. As much as I, you know, trends get on my nerves at times, it also is what sells. Readers see the trends and they go for that.
Sure.
So I always look at the trends, especially when I'm about to do a cover of a series or a book that I'm not personally familiar with or something like that. And so, and with series, you also have to make sure that it can be branded as a series as well as branded as the author, but still stand out. And I mean, there's a lot of different little things. So when I was looking through, I saw lots of models being, you know, handcuffed or whatever. And I don't think Amazon allows handcuffs, but you know what I mean. A lot of models in various, you know, positions that lead to the BDSM lifestyle, or even some that just were, you know, couples being all kissy-kissy or half naked, and there was very few that actually showed the lifestyle without showing the lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And when I went looking for photos to use for it, I came across one in particular. I didn't end up actually using it, but it was just a woman was laying on her back and her feet were in the air, but her feet were shackled to the wall. And I looked at that and I was like, but the shackles is the story. It could be anybody in those damn shackles. it could be a woman, it could be a man. It depends on which way, you know, who's the dom, who's the sub. So, but in order to get people to stop and read the summary of it, I didn't want the people that wanted their subs to be a man to just pass it by because it was a woman's legs. I didn't want the people who, you know, wanted the female to be the dom to pass it by because it was a woman's legs. So, but if you leave the shackles, they're going to go, what else is that about? And they're going to look. So that's where that started. And then I started looking for photos of just the, the stuff. So then I found those.
And
it's a perfect.
Yeah,
absolutely. I love them. And
well, the thing that was neat about it, and you know, I think a lot of writers truly push too much of their own thoughts in a sense, and they're not designers. And I try to tell the authors that are coming in, you know, really, let the designers do their work. Tell them what the book's about. Make sure and get to the core, but let them do their job. But
yeah, that doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't, and, you know, there's a lot of authors I know that are, quite frankly, a pain in the ass because they want to have, you know, 6, 10, 12 redos, and nope, sorry. But on the flip side to it, there are times that an author might know something that could be more core integral to the book that you as a cover designer would know, and the clear example for us is you had red roses on the covers. And I told you about a ceremony, and it's called the White Rose Ceremony, which is very, very important. It's like a heightened level of marriage and connection in a DS coupling, and I thought that would be much more symbolic because most of my folks are actually married. And so you changed it to White Roses.
I did, absolutely. I love getting input from the authors to make it fit better. And I tell you what, changing a red rose to a white rose seems like it should be easy, but it's not. There's a few different steps, at least in my process. I'm sure there is somebody that's been doing Photoshop since Photoshop was started that can go, oh, of course it's easy. But that's not me. I'm self-taught for the most part, and it took me a few steps, but I got it, and I was happy with it. If I wasn't happy with it, you wouldn't have seen it. And so that's where that came from. But I was more than happy to change it over, especially if it fit better with the book. I mean, I have had those authors that want, you know, a million different covers before they choose one. And then they end up going back to the very first one in the first place. And it's just like, oh my goodness, are you kidding me? I don't think a lot of people realize how much time is involved in cover design.
True.
Some of us are quick because we know our craft, and once we know our author, we can get it out there. But if it's the first time working with a designer, they don't know you, you don't know them. It's a learning curve. It's a process. I've spent a couple hours on a single draft only to have the author decide against it, even though it's the best option there is of the ones that we've come to, and then they have me do 5 more, and then they come back to that one anyway. Hours goes into cover design, and it's a lot of work, but I love putting the shiny cover on a great story.
And it
makes
really
me feel like part of the process. I mean, I'll never forget the day that BuzzFeed actually featured one of my authors, and I was so happy for her, but at the same time, I'm jumping up and down because my book cover's on BuzzFeed.
Oh, you bet.
You know? And I mean, it's great, especially when I see them doing well, because, you know, I've done the covers for J.C. Emery, who writes a motorcycle series, the Bayonet Scar series. All of those books have been, have been in the top 100, if not overall, but in category. And that was one of the ones that was featured on BuzzFeed, was one of her Bayonet Scar series. And I get so much credit for those books, but I keep telling them, I was like, if she didn't write a great book, I wouldn't have had anything to put a cover on. And she tells everybody else that if I didn't have a great cover, you wouldn't have picked it up to read what's great about it. I mean, I really think that the cover and the book work together. You can't have one without the other.
Oh, very much so. You're absolutely right. And I don't think that those who aren't in the industry really understand that all of it is a process. You know, BookTrope highlights that in a sense with having a team. You have designers, editors, proofreaders, et cetera, et cetera. But, and you try to work together to bring this wonderful, cohesive, beautiful piece to the forefront. But there's a lot of work that goes on in the background trying to put everything
together. Oh, my goodness, yes. It takes a long time. And I tell you what, I do my own covers, and it takes me even longer because I don't have somebody that I'm bouncing ideas off of. I do something, and then I think I like it, and then 2 days later, I'm like, never mind. And
right.
I do it again, and I do it again.
And you're your own worst critic, of course, as well.
Of course. Of course. It takes me the longest to do my own covers. I can do somebody else's cover in a snap as long as they give me what I need. But my own stuff, forget it. It takes forever.
We're doing a station identification here for a second, just in case we get any callers, the folks that would like to talk to Brenda. You were on the edge with Cassandra Dane, and if you'd like to call in and talk to Brenda or her pseudo, Miss Adrian James, please do call in at 714-242-5259. As you've been getting more involved in designing as opposed to writing, I mean, is there one love over the other, or is this just, you know, two sides of Brenda?
I think it's just two sides. I mean, I'm a very artistic person to begin with. Like I said, I mean, I cook. I'm also that mom that does all the crochet and knitting and art projects with the kids, and I'm a Girl Scout troop leader, so I do all kinds of projects with them. Writing is just another art outlet for me, and so is the designing. I mean, the photography, it all kind of goes together. I've always been very artistic in nature, and this just gives me the different outlets to do so. I think with writing, I get to be the most creative, because with the cover design, yes, it's creative and it's great, but I have to give somebody else's vision, somebody else's story. I think I'm happiest when I'm designing a cover for a novel that I wrote, because I know the story. It's like completing the whole thing. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it sure does.
It's hard for me to explain a lot of this stuff. I mean, it's just who I am. And for a while there, you know, I was really busy with other life things that were going on around here. And my online stuff, my art stuff kind of fell to the wayside, and I was just depressed. I was sad, you know. I was trying to make it work because I am mom and I am wife and I am a daughter, and everybody needed me, and I was trying to put on the happy face and go about my business. But at the end of the day, all I wanted to do was, you know, do my work. And I'm finally back to it now, pretty much full time, at least for the next 3 months. And then, you know, I'll have yet another person demanding my attention.
Yes, and little people are a lot more important in a lot of ways. So
they really are. They are. And there is always nap time. That whole, you know, old adage, sleep when the baby sleeps, it's never worked for me, like, ever. So at least when the baby sleeps, I know I can get some words in. If I can get some words down on the page, I'll be good.
How much can you usually write when you have quiet time in a sitting?
Oh, my goodness. It depends on if I'm in the zone or not, and if I have the Wi-Fi turned on. If the Wi-Fi is turned on, Facebook is a time suck, and you get sucked in and you lose track of time. If I turn my Wi-Fi off, which I tend to do, I can get anywhere from 1,000 to 3,000 words an hour, depending on the story and what part of the story I'm in. If I know what's going to happen and I know where I'm going, it's the higher end. If I kind of have to muddle my way through a little bit to figure out what's going to happen next, then it's the lower end. But if I have the time, I can get through some words. As long as my brain is focused and I'm not being distracted. And like I said, I turn my Wi-Fi off.
Yes, and
I'm a big fan of Nano too. NaNoWriMo, National. Yeah, I did. Let's see here. The Life on Loan was a nano project. For those of you that don't know, nano is where you basically attempt to write 50,000 words in the month of November. It's an online writing challenge. Millions of people across the world join in. It's actually a fundraiser for a great charity that takes writing and reading to inner city schools and things like that. Life on Loan was my first young adult novel. That one was a nano project. I wrote that in a month, and I wrote the first 50,000 words in the month of November. And then I figured I can take a break. I'll be good. Yeah, I shouldn't have done that. It took me another year to finish it. But it was finished. So there's that. Overexposed was my other young adult novel. That was a nano project. I wrote that one in November. I completed the whole book in November that time. I didn't stop once I hit 50,000 words. I just finished the book. The Tempering, which is the first book in my Mackenzie series. It's a paranormal romance with werewolves. That one was a November project. That one I got most of done in November. And The Billionaire and the Barfly was also an nano project. I got that one done in 1 month. So when I can set my mind to it, I can write fast. But
yeah,
we'll see what happens this November when, you know, I have a little one coming. I have 2 weeks. I'm due in November, so I'm going to start it, but I don't know how far I'm going to get. It's going to be interesting. I'll bring my little voice recorder into the labor delivery room and yell at the nurses to get out while I'm brainstorming or something. I can just see myself doing it.
Yeah, I can see you doing
it. Be like, stop, you can't listen to this theme.
I love
you
the
will
idea.
Think I'm dirty. Get out. Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Writing industry, and whether it's designing or whether it's actually writing a book, that is, what are the good and bad trends in your mind?
Oh, goodness. The good and bad trends. I think with the writing community, unfortunately, the bad trend isn't anything to do with the actual publishing industry. It's people online. It's turned into this massive high school. Not even a high school, middle school, where everybody's mean and there's cliques, and it's not okay. It's like everybody says, you know, bullying is bad, and they got it to stop in schools. Well, guess what? It didn't stop. It just moved online, and it seems like they're all readers and reviewers and other authors, and it's horribly sad. And I try and, you know, stay away from all of that drama online, but sometimes it pops up on your feed anyway, and you're like, okay, scrolling past. I do, yeah, and I think a good trend in the writing community right now is the fact that you see books about everything now. I mean, there will always be the popular books that everybody flocks to, but if you want to read about, you know, well, like, I had never heard of the books I did the covers for you, where the domestic discipline, I've never heard of that in my life. I had no idea. I'm like, that's why I asked you. I was like, what the hell is this? But there's books about it now.
What do you think after you found out?
I thought that would be a lifestyle that was not for me in any way, shape, form, or fashion, but that's not the point. The point is that there is a readership for it now.
Yep.
With the growing ebook community and readership, it allows you to write just about anything and find a reader base for it. It allows readers to go virtual shopping and not have to look over their shoulder worried or embarrassed that somebody's going to see them in the section of the bookstore they don't want to be seen in.
True.
So there are a lot more books out there about anything and everything, and I think that's great. With the cover design stuff, I see a lot of monotony, and that drives me crazy. But I also see a lot of people not wanting to put the money or the effort into a professional cover, thinking that they can do it themselves. And while some people can, I mean, I was doing my own covers, obviously, but I kind of have the training to do so. But I know a few people that have taken the time to learn how to do it so that they can put out something that looks good. But there's a lot of people that just grab a picture off Google and slap some text on it and call it a book cover and call it a day, and that's not okay. That I think when you do something like that, it cheapens the whole self-publishing, indie press, anything, you know, small press, it cheapens it all and makes, and that's, it just furthers the stigma that it's not as good as. When, if you look at the New York Times bestseller list, generally, at least half of them are small press or self-publish at this point. And people just don't get it because they're still going off of the stigma that it's not as good as. And if we want to break that mold, we have to put out a professional product every time. You can have the best story in the world, but if you don't hire a professional editor, a professional cover designer, you know, people aren't going to take you seriously, and that's a shame.
Well, one of the trends that I see, and I try to help authors with in Book Trope, is for some reason there truly is this concept that, well, you drop a cover just a couple days before the book's ready to be released, and there you go. And I totally
disagree. No. I absolutely disagree. You've got to build buzz for your book long before a couple days. And in order to build buzz for a book, if you want to make a big deal out of the cover, out of a cover reveal, that's great, but do it a couple months ahead.
Yeah.
You know? But if you want to make, and then I've also heard the opposite where they don't want to do the cover reveal and then have too much time in between and have people forget about the book by the time it actually publishes. But there's a way to do it where you use teasers, you use teaser images, you use your Facebook profile picture, you use your timeline on your Facebook page, you know, and you can even draw out your cover reveal through a couple different weeks by doing, well, here's the left corner, here's the right corner, here's the top left corner, here's the top left corner, you know what I mean? Reveal a different corner at a time, or, but there's ways of doing it where you keep the buzz going, but then you have the photo, you have the cover for marketing. Because if you only do it a week beforehand, which a lot of people do, then they see it and then it gets buried. Or what about the people that didn't log on to the blog that one day? And then when they go to, oh, she has a book releasing? I didn't know about that.
Right.
I mean, it's a process. But it's a learning curve too. And I think that a lot of new authors need to team up with some older authors to mentor them. But a lot of the older authors also need to, and not older in age, but experience, I guess,
right,
need to be more open to helping the new guys. It's not, we're competition, but we're not competition. A reader isn't going to read one single person's book and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. And I tell the authors, you know, it's all about sharing and highlighting each other. Covers to the excitement and buzz of a blog tour or a thunderclap or you know, whatever it is, you know, that if we all would do that, there is a market for everyone out there. And how many times have you seen someone, if you've had anyone on your blog that is a guest author, and of course your readers are going to find them and love them, but it goes in reverse. I've got
absolutely
a new reader because I've been on a blog, and they went, wow, I didn't know this kind of book existed.
Yeah. Or like I tell people all the time, reach out to your local community too, because especially if you're a small town, like I'm in a small town,
right.
They kind of embrace the idea of somebody from their small town doing something so great. Well, I, you know, knew her when kind of thing. And, most areas have local events. Even if you're in a big city, there is usually some kind of local event, a street fair, a carnival, anything. You know, hell, we all have libraries, right? You know,
yeah.
Reach out to your local people. Even if all you're doing is going up to the library and saying, here's a copy of my book. Or if you don't have print books and all you have is ebooks, going to the library and saying, hey, I have these ebooks. Would you mind putting them in your catalog?
and you and I had this discussion actually last night where we were kind of chatting about, you know, what does book tropes feel on it, and I have kind of probably my view isn't the best because I'm a little jaded with some things that have happened to me and being chastised.
Yes, we're not, like, we don't see eye to eye on that whole issue, but
you know,
it takes all kinds.
But I agree with you. I mean, I think that if you have an opportunity with whatever it is in your basic hometown and you can get the crowd rallied around it, I think that's a fabulous thing to do. It can filter out from there. Perhaps you know, you're in Delaware, you slide up to New York or down to Philadelphia or something, and they have the larger conventions. You've already got a base.
You just got to drive from Delaware, sweetie. There's no flying involved. If I'm going to New York, well, I wouldn't be flying into New York because you fly out of New York or Philly or D.C. You have to drive to these places.
Well, I realize that. But
we're so tiny, we don't have an airport.
You don't have an airport, huh? Well, you do.
Sorry.
We're tiny.
Well, no, but like when I was in New York City last year for a signing, I went up there for the chapter by chapter New York City signing, and there was a lot of big authors there, so they had a huge crowd. But while I was in the city, my best friend and I, who's also an author, we stayed in the city a couple extra days just to we were both writing a book based in the city, so we wanted to explore and kind of use it as research, basically. We found the little cool hideout spots, and we found some cool local places that, you know, aren't tourist attractions. But either way, we stopped over at the New York City Library, and we brought books, and we donated them, and they are now on the shelves.
That's awesome.
I mean, it's just, you can find and do these things. Anyway, you'd be surprised. If you went to college, they have a library. And especially if you graduated from their college, they'll be like, sure, that's awesome. Let's put them on the shelf. Mm-hmm. I don't know any library that'll turn you away, honestly. A book is a book. If you're near any of the hospitals, they usually have a small area for books that for the people waiting to look through, or children's hospitals for the parents that have to stay there for weeks on end with their kids. So if you don't write kids' books, there's still a way of getting books there to be read by adults that may not have known who you were ahead of time, but they saw your book donated to the library, so they figured they'd check you out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a million different ways. There's a million different ways to market yourself. And your story and your cover are just the beginning.
That's true.
You are your brand.
You are, and that's something that we have really tried with the various books of mine. You know, branding means a lot of things, but it's being able to be recognized. You can write I write in 10 different genres, but if you can pick it up and know that, okay, that's who I'm looking for, that's the author I remember based on the font style or whatever it is, I think that's very helpful for readers.
Right, and then even the books, your books can be completely and totally different from each other, but still have a brand to them.
Yeah.
Like my books, I mean, I've written teenagers through 100-year-old, you know, werewolves, but you can find my brand through all of the books. I write strong women, strong love, and powerful magic. That is my brand. All the books may not have all three, but they all have at least two.
Right.
You know, and you won't find me writing a weak female. I can't stand them. No Bellas for me. Thank you. Sorry, was that low?
No. We all have those books that we go, not that one. Not doing that.
Exactly. My brand is clear through all of my books. Even though the covers fit the genre, but at the same time, when you open it up, you know it's me.
I think if I could impress anything on authors that are really coming into the business, it really is about branding. Branding means the look, of course. It also means the quality. It also means the professionalism of not just the way you handle your book and your writing and your editing, but also your presence in the marketplace.
Absolutely. And that marketplace is online. Any interaction you do online, there is no such thing as a private group.
Oh.
FYI, people, there is such a thing as a screenshot and people will use it.
Oh, yeah.
There is no such thing as a private.
Nope.
Yes, there's nothing private online. Therefore, you have to be professional at all times. I'm not saying you have to be stuffy and boring. I mean, I post fun, silly things all the time, and I post hot pictures of sexy guys, and I mean, but that's my brand, so it's okay. You won't see me very often posting anything political, not because I don't have political views, but because it's not part of my brand.
Right.
If it's something that I feel very strongly about and I don't care what you think, if it's, you know, or like when the whole marriage equality went through with the Supreme Court, I was so happy. I was so supportive. I've been posting things about that for years and I will never stop because it's something I truly believe in. So that is me and that is my brand because I believe love is powerful no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But you won't see me posting my personal opinions on candidates, the Republican candidates or the Democratic candidates for that matter. You won't know who I'm voting for by looking at my page because that's not my part of my brand. It's different. You know, I don't post anything about religion. I don't post anything political for the most part. Like I said, there are some political things I do get involved in. But for the most part, no, I don't. Do I sit there and look at my computer screen at these, you know, idiots on TV spouting that they want to be president? Yeah. Do I, you know, yell at them through the TV when they're doing some kind of interview? Sure. But that's one of those business practices you learn from day one. You never know who you're going to offend.
Yeah.
And the whole, you know, don't be too PC thing. Well, guess what? When it comes to you want people to buy your book or you want people to buy your product or you want people to use your service, don't offend people is number one. They're not going to care if you're the, yeah, they won't care if it's the best thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
They'll just be like, well, I'm not buying anything from her because she said this.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I don't know. It seems to be common sense to me, but apparently it's not.
I honestly don't think that people realize that once you put anything out there on the internet, it will never go away. It will come back to find you or haunt you depending on what the case may be. And that's
absolutely
why you have to choose what your brand is and also be prepared to stand by it. Whether you are writing erotic books and you know you're going to get criticism from, you have to understand and know that. Whether you're writing horror and for some reason, it, you know, your entire family is, you know, so against you that you're going to fight what you share in your everyday life. You have to be prepared for that. You also have to be prepared for the knowledge that people are going to pay attention to what you say. You as an author can influence more people than anyone ever truly understands.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I'm with you. And hopefully one day, you know, people will get that.
I think you're going to see, and this is my personal opinion, I think you're going to see a lot of and I hate to use this term, but it really does fit fairly well, prima donnas falling to the wayside. They're going either get fed up or people are going to get fed up with them and they will refuse to work with them.
Right.
But they may always find a voice. There are always ways. There again, people have to remember, this is a business. If you're doing it to write and all you care about is the love of writing and somebody may never see it, then whatever, that's fine. Good for you. You're enjoying your writing. If you want to sell and if you ever hope of making anything of it, you have to remember from day one it is a business.
Absolutely.
Whether you're doing a blog, doing a post, joining a team, whatever it is, we're all trying to do something while we live our everyday lives.
Mm-hmm.
With designing, one thing I wanted to ask you about, because you have done what is, you know, the banner that I use on Cassandra's page right now, and it has three of the book covers you created for me.
Right.
What do you see, and how do you think that those and any other form of artistic creations that you might have done, what do you think works, and in your opinion, what doesn't work?
When it comes to the artistic stuff for marketing, you need something that's going to grab your eye, but it's not going to be too busy. You need to be able to differentiate what you're seeing, like with the book covers. You don't want so many covers on there that you don't know where your eye doesn't know where to go. But you also don't want a ton of blank space either. It's like this wonderful compromise, like a dance between being completely, what's the word, simple to being overly complex. There is a place for the completely simple, and there is a place for the overly complex, but marketing is not it. You need to find the balance in between the two. And like with yours, because I don't want the completely simple, that's why you don't have a plain black background. You have that gorgeous man laying across your screen.
Yeah.
And it fits your brand, for one. You always have to make sure the brand is in there. Always, always, always. And your brand is not simple. It's not plain. It's not boring. Your brand is also not so over the top out there that you don't know where to look. You are very concise with what you write, with what your brand is. So that's what your marketing has to say. So you've got this gorgeous man laying there. And because you write both male-male and male-female, a single man by himself works for either one, no matter who's looking at it.
True.
It's the same thing I said with the shackles. You're not turning either readership away by seeing that one image.
Right.
It applies to more than one readership. And then we only put three covers on there to keep it clean, but also more than just simple. It gives them variety. You have to look at it for more than a second. You're not going to just scroll by it. And the key to any marketing is to get people to look at it for more than a second.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they just flip by it, they're not going to remember it.
And I think the choice of what you, the books that you selected to put on there show a range of things that it's easy to tell by the selection without having to even look at going to find it and looking at the synopsis.
Right.
You did very well with that. I get a lot of compliments on that puppy.
Well, send them my way. give them my design page. Have them message me.
Well, you know, as I have tried to get you to do cover after cover, and you ran away from me for all good reasons.
Hey!
Yes, but I lured you back somehow, at least in the interim.
Yeah.
That was a bit, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad you do such marvelous work, and you know you're.
I just had, oh my goodness, I just had the worst beginning of this pregnancy ever, mixed with stress of family life, and it just wasn't happening.
I know.
So.
I know that, and I hope I didn't bug you too much. It's just you.
No, you're all right. I know, and I'm. But you know what? I don't mind being bugged when it comes to, because you like my stuff. I feel bad is when it takes me weeks to do something because I was so sick, you know, and most of my authors understood that, and I greatly appreciate that. So,
well, if you also plan with what you're doing, I think there's another misnomer that once you get accepted that your book's going to be out in 3 weeks.
That's not how it works.
If it is, then there's a real problem.
Right.
So you can take time doing it if you do it right. You think about your cover immediately, try to get that moving forward. You have your synopsis done so that you can, when they're done, begin that marketing phase. And there, as
right.
you said, many phases to do it. And that just gains excitement, and it's excitement for you as the author, for the designer. You know, again, you're working as a team.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So as we're winding down on our wonderful hour here, I would love to hear, what is Adrian doing next?
Oh, goodness. So Adrian has pregnancy brain, just like I do. And my head keeps, I keep bouncing between stories, so I honestly can't say when the next one will be done, because I haven't been able to focus on a single one of them right now. I go between them. So the next one to be released through Book Trope is going to be Life on Loan. That's a dark, gritty, not dark as in scary, but more gritty and raw, real look at life through a homeless teenager's eyes. There are moments where you tear up reading it because it's so sad and so hard for these kids. But there's also, you know, your happy moments, because no matter who you are, even no matter how much your life sucks, you always find something to laugh at some point. And then after that is Billionaire and the Barfly is going to be re-releasing with Book Trope. I'm not sure. I believe Life on Loan is supposed to release next month in September. And as long as everything goes as planned, Billionaire and the Barfly will be re-releasing in October. As long as everything goes as planned. as for what I'm writing, I have a few things in the works, but I'm thinking that this next one that's going to be ready will be, it's actually a cowboy story. It's a contemporary romance, with erotic flair to it. And, it's interesting. I started it a few years ago and I set it down. I don't remember why I put it down, but apparently I got busy with something else and wrote other books. And so, but I picked it back up and I reread what I wrote. And because it's been so long since I wrote it, I pretty much forgot what I had put in there. So it was like reading somebody else's book. Mm-hmm. And I got completely sucked in and I'm laughing with it and I'm screaming at it. And then, because when it's up, I sent it to my Kindle so I could read it when I was out and about with the kids. And I get to the end of what I wrote, which happens to be in the middle of a chapter, right after my hero is asking the heroine if, you know, he's good enough for her. And then it just stops. That's like the worst cliffhanger in the history of the world. And I looked at my Kindle and I'm trying to push the next page and there's no next page. And I yell at my Kindle, I throw it across the room, and my husband's just laughing at me. He's like, well, I guess you need to finish it then, don't you? So my brain is very much on that story right now, so I think I'm going to focus on that. At least I'm going to try to focus on that. If it doesn't work to stay focused on that, I have a story about mages going, I have a story about vampires going, and I have a story outlined that I'm not even sure what genre it would be considered, because it's not a romance, but it's about a prostitute. So I will have to wait and see what comes of that. So
you write as many genres as I do. I love it.
I do. I'm all kind of all over the place. But like I said, I've always been a very creative person. I can't just make it go in one direction. Whatever story comes out is what comes out. I just am glad I have an outlet for it now and the teachers aren't looking at me like I'm strange.
Now, wait a minute. You could still be strange. I mean, let's face it.
Well, I am still strange, but at least now my strangeness has an outlet and it makes sense. I remember when I was in high school, my best friend and I in high school, we were teamed up in an English class to write a story. And, we wrote a story about a cat named Smokey McPot. And Smokey McPot was a pothead. Ta-da! We were so creative. But this story was only supposed to be 2 pages long. That was the assignment. Ours was 20. And you could tell when the teacher was reading it because we'd all be doing some other assignment and she's in the back corner just cracking up. We wrote this off the wall. She seriously came up to us afterward, told us that we both should be writers, and then asked us if we needed to be drug tested. No, we just thought it was funny. You know, neither one of us had ever done anything like that ever. And we were actually the, you know, straight-laced good kids. And we just thought it would be hilarious. And it was. And she ended up sending it to all the teachers in the school who all read it. And yeah, it was one of those, okay. So when I did finally publish, I sent her a copy of the book, and she just laughed. She's like, I knew you'd do it.
Good for you. What an awesome thing to do.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, now tell us where we can find you as the designer and you as the author as well.
Okay, me as a designer is Brenda Gonnett. You can find me at Gonnett Design. I have a Facebook page, and I also have a website, gonnettdesign.weebly.com. And then as an author, I have my Facebook page, and that you can find me at Author Adrienne James over on Facebook.
Awesome. Well, I have loved having you on today. I so appreciate you telling me about two of your many sides. You are truly
well, I've had Well, I've had fun talking with you too.
Well, as she is finishing getting several of my covers up, I will probably have to try and entice her to do more, especially before the little one comes. I have my ways about me, so you never know.
Well, thank you.
All right, Miss. Thank you very much, and you go have a fabulous afternoon with your kids. Lock yourself or unlock yourself from the office and go play.
I'm about to. They've been knocking on the door for 5 minutes.
Well, thanks again for your time, and I will talk to you soon.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks, Brenda. And to all of our listeners, you have been on the Edge with Cassandra Dane, and remember that you can certainly download this at any time, listen at your leisure. This has been the World of Ink Network. We have lots of fabulous shows coming up. I have guests coming through, booked already through Halloween, and our Halloween special will be with the Naughty Nights Press crew, who I also have a new book out with, and we're going to be talking all things horror and wretched and ugly. And then we're going to have the group from The Animal on as well, and that's an upcoming book. It's a collection of pieces with The Forsaken and The Edge writers from BookTrope. So thanks so much to you from lovely Virginia. I hope you guys have a wonderful afternoon, and we'll talk to you soon.